This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
How we doing, Pats peeps and Foxborough friends? We welcome you to the latest and always greatest edition of the Six Rings and Football Things podcast with your old pal and host who sometimes offers the most, Nick Fitzy Stevens. Follow me at FitzyGFY. Andy Hart is unable to join us for this particular edition because it is a condensed Thanksgiving week. And one of the things that we are thankful for, in addition to the fact that we have to wait 6 days till we watch the next tire fire that is a New England Patriots football game, is that one of my favorite new follows in the wide world of Twitter, sports analytics, and just crapping all over the Patriots, the man known as Borish_sports. Borish is here. Bo is our guest today on the Six Rings podcast. I'm very happy to be basically hosting this guy for the first time. Everyone follows him now. He's become one of everyone's favorite new follows. And this is, come on, steer into it. Enjoy.
Nobody follows me.
Take the accolades and the compliments for what they are, my guy. You do an awesome job. Great to have Bo here, Borish Sports, with us on Six Rings and Football Things, following the absolute debacle in Miami. 34-15 was the final. We were just talking right before we got rolling this morning. One of Bo's tweets yesterday from @Borish_sports. I caught this one right before kickoff. Why do I get the feeling that the Patriots will have to score 35 to win today? Dude, you are a prophet and a sage, because 35 points would have got it done because the final was 34-15, except both of us know in our hearts that 35 points wouldn't have gotten it done because Miami could have easily turned on the Jets and gassed that game up into the 40s if they wanted to. So yeah. Let's just take a big, broad view of things before we get into the weeds of what a mess the Patriots are right now. Did you think that things would be as bad as they are right now, sitting at 3-9, teetering on the verge of an almost organizational collapse, even with the North Star of Drake May on the team?
Not really. I thought they were at least, you know, hold serve on defense a little bit. I know, like, the injuries are a big thing. Bentley's a huge miss. I think it's pretty obvious now that dude kind of held shit together in the center of that defense, right? Because, I mean, we got picked apart across the middle of the field yesterday, basically. I mean, we got picked apart everywhere on the field, but that's kind of where Tua's, bread is buttered, right across the middle, quick stuff, and just our linebackers. We need linebackers. Apparently we need quarterbacks, and apparently we need an edge rusher, too. On defense. So yeah, I thought 35 was gonna be the number, and you're probably right. I think if they didn't bring in Skylar Thompson for the fumble recovery, they probably would have got up to 40 or so, and I probably would have been wrong at that point. But yeah, it felt like it was going to be a disaster yesterday, and it was, unfortunately. So I guess we wait for the next one. But no, I did not think it was going to be overall this season as bad as it was.
Yeah, I mean, that game, you can't say that game is microcosm for the season, because they've been far more competitive at times. What we saw yesterday was I think it was borderline embarrassing for the logo, for the team, for the season ticket holders, for the yous and the me's that follow it. You know, you doing what you do just sheerly out of a passion play, but obviously you've been growing a following and you've got some devotees on social media, myself, making it taking a passion and turning it into a profession. Like, that was a ghastly, ghastly football effort. They were non-competitive from jump street, or rather they were, but then they did what Bill Simmons jumped all over as well. Jerod Mayo started coaching scared. That 3rd-and-16 handoff, just because you see Joey Sly making 65 yarders in the pregame, to for AVP to call a draw on 3rd and 16 and just take the chance to make a 45-yarder in a game where you know Tua is undefeated against you. Spoiler alert, he still is. And then they just absolutely opened a can of offensive whoop-ass all over your defense that was communicating so poorly. That is the recipe for failure. No one is going to evolve into the football player they can become if they continue to coach scared like that.
Yeah. It's weird. Mayo on defense was aggressive last week and conservative on offense, and it kind of worked. And then they kind of flipped that. My issue mainly is with the offense. I don't want to waste another quarterback. People got upset with me because I didn't want to take a quarterback in this past year's draft. It had little to do with Drake May. I was worried about the turnovers and things like that. I feel like that stuff is kind of proven out. He's a risk taker. You can get away with that kind of shit in the ACC and the NFL when it speeds up. It's tougher. So I love the Rams approach on offense when it was just short passes, dink and dunk, high percentage throws, that kind of stuff. He was super efficient. I have numbers from week 11 and week 12 if you want to get into like what I think was going on there.
Hell yeah.
But I just think it's more of a – I have more issues with the offense than the defense. I think the defense, once it's healthy, will kind of figure its shit out. I truly believe that. I don't think that's a long-term thing. Covington, I don't know. We don't know. I mean, losing Bill Belichick's a big fucking deal, right? I think we all knew that before the season. Even the ones that wanted him fired, me not among them, I thought, you know, roll it again with the greatest coach of all time, but what do I know? But yeah, it's kind of apparent that the defense is lacking something, but I think talent on the defensive end is there. It's just not here right now. You know what I mean? Like, they'll be there next year, I think. Outside of Marcus Jones, who got fucking torched yesterday.
Yeah, what happened to Marcus Jones? I am a card carrying member of the Marcus Jones Appreciation Society. I want to see him used more on offense. You know, I was even trolling our own fan base and team when I, you know, retweeting Travis Hunter taking a slant pass 50 yards to the house Sunday. Oh, what a novel concept, using your best playmaker overall on offense when you need a spark to score points. But yesterday he was a borderline no-show. And I'm with you too. People don't want to hear excuses, but I've called it like the spine of the defense. If you lose your catcher, your shortstop, and your center fielder, you're going to have the shittiest defense in all of Major League Baseball. So when you lose your best defensive tackle, you trade away your best pass rusher, who was now starting to look a little more over the hill than not.
Yeah,
at least he had to be a factor in the equation. Like, if people would account for Matt Judon, then that would leave some lanes open for the Whites or the Wises or the Jennings of the world. But then the most criminally underrated member of the Patriots defense post-2020, Juwan Bentley as well, your signal caller, a great tackler, a fundamentally sound football player, you know, slow linebackers, Fitz. Yeah, well, you know what? He got shit done. And then, of course, Jabril Peppers, who was the second highest graded safety last year in the NFL against the run. You're not going to have the same defense. Christian Gonzalez, you know, in full Giselle, like, he cannot cover the players and make the points not happen. I'm sorry. Like, this is just not how it works.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, but like you said, you're naming people that theoretically will be back here, right?
Yeah.
So Bentley will be back. Peppers, we don't really know, but that's trending to be back. I don't know. I don't want to make any assumptions on that. That's kind of a weird case. But I think there's light there at the end of the tunnel, right? On offense, it's like, oh my God, what the fuck? what do we have there? What do we have on offense?
So, all right. So
outside of Drake May, Drake May's been above expectations,
100%
above my expectations. I just think the coaching, we can get it to AVP later or now or whatever.
Let's go right now.
I just think that when Drake May was at his best, so those numbers I was hinting at earlier, right? So just week 11, his air yards per attempt, 5.8, right? His air yards per attempt last week, or Sunday against Miami, 8.1. So we're trying to work deeper down the field, right? Pressure rate, which game do you think was higher pressure, yesterday or against the Rams?
I'll say that I think the Rams game was like somewhere in the high 30s.
The Rams was 46.7.
So he was pressured on every other dropback.
Basically pressured on every dropback, every other dropback. Yesterday was 37.8. Not great. but better than the Rams.
Okay.
Right? Play action.
Mm-hmm.
22% play action against the Rams. 6.7% against the Dolphins.
That's it?
That's it. What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, and, that's, I mean, you're just announcing what you're doing to the team.
Yeah. I mean, Antonio Gibson, obviously you're not going to run the ball when you're down 30 points or whatever, right? That's not the play. But in the first quarter, when Antonio Gibson is moving the ball at a decent clip, you're not going to use play action against them, especially when it was effective when he actually did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He actually looked like one of the only people that drank a Celsius before the game.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
He looked like one of the only guys that actually like had a little spring in his step. Like there looked to be a, like, again, they always open up well, Bo. Like they start like they go up 7-0 against the Rams, and then they start to coach scared. They don't go for the field goal. They punt it away. And then you're just giving Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay, some of the original AI of contemporary offensive football minds, to learn what you're doing and then improve upon it, make in-game adjustments, which the Patriots do not seem to do, or at least...
Or they are, and it's not effective adjustments.
That's what scares me, is that other teams are doing it, and they have the talent and the coaching savvy to be more effective, and the Patriots are trying to, and they're failing, and we're watching it play out in real time, and that's what scares me going forward with this brain trust, collaborative, silo-free consortium of football minds, if you will.
Yeah, I want the offense to be more dink and dunk, shorter stuff. They got the ball out quick against the Rams because you have to neutralize that pressure, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if you're getting pressured on 50% of your dropbacks, get the ball out as fast as you can, right? So against the blitz last week, let's see. So the blitz percentage of 33% last week mm-hmm. against the Rams. 71% completion percentage, okay? Yesterday against the Dolphins, 20% blitz percent, 33% completion percentage on those blitzes. It was just night and day. They're going too deep. They're trying to go too deep on these pressured looks, and it's just not there. And the separation's actually pretty good. I looked at the separation on Next Gen. It's like top 10 for wide receiver separation. It's just not great throws, not great scheme. It's just too far down the field for when Chop Robinson is coming off the edge and just fucking making Jacobs look like an asshole. Yeah, it's like, this is embarrassing.
It was. The offensive line yesterday, I mean, we haven't even teetered into the realm of, you know, the ineptitude that comes with the lack of preparation and the focus with penalties. 13 penalties in week 12. When you have more penalties than what week you are in the NFL, you are doing a bad job coaching.
Yeah, that's a problem.
13 penalties, 10 accepted, 75 yards. Poor Vadarian Lowe. Just and Austin, the one that I think was the most outlandish and offensive to most people was, what's Austin Hooper, the guy who scores the lone offensive touchdown, what is Austin Hooper doing lining up like a full yard offsides? Like, you've been in the league 10 years, guy. Who do you think is not getting through to who? And why are the communication issues getting worse as the season progresses? They should be getting better.
Yeah, to me, that's like a fundamental issue, right? And like, players have to execute, absolutely. But fundamentals, I think, come down to coaching and learning. And if you're not learning, then you're not coaching properly, right? If the players aren't learning what to do, where to line up, not jumping off sides, like that kind of shit. I have to put that at least partially, maybe 50%. I don't want to put a number on it, but if I had to, I'd say it's 50-50 between the player and the coach. I just, like, that's fundamental, like, Pee Wee football shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we're week 12 in an NFL season.
Okay, so here's a commenter right now as we broadcast live across the 50 GFY and WEEI socials. Jorge Landeo, who's watching live right now as we record Six Rings on Facebook. It's Miami. All Pats teams go to die there. Here's a fun number back for you, Borsch. The Patriots now have run their all-time record to 16-43 in Miami.
Fucking crazy.
It's un-effing believable. All Pats teams go to die there. It's cursed. I would give them a pass.
I mean, did they all lose by fucking 30 points or whatever?
Yeah, did they get run off the field? Did they get run off the field?
Right.
Did they have former Rams safeties now doing, you know, weekend play-by-play work next to insert name of Z team announcer for CBS here saying, I don't understand what's going on. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, Adam Archuleta, I think, was being kind to the Patriots yesterday. I almost want to hear like what an unfiltered broadcast would be like.
I would love it.
Like let not to say I want Pat McAfee calling it, but like just give me a full NSFW broadcast of what real football pros would say, and they would drop 10,000 more F-bombs than you and I will over the course of this podcast.
Yeah, it's like it's just because it's not even real football sometimes. Like it's just you look at it and it's like what am I watching? Like you watch the afternoon games after and it's like how is this even the same sport? Like they're so undisciplined. It doesn't look like American football to me sometimes. It's like, right. What the fuck am I watching?
Like that 3rd and 17 play yesterday where Drake turns around, throws the backwards lateral to Kendrick Bourne, and we're like, oh, now we're going to pull out the McDaniels Edelman to Amendola pass. Desperation, thy destination is Hard Rock Stadium. And then he throws it back, and he shouldn't have, and it hits the feet of Ramondre, who's up the butt.
Didn't he say he didn't even see Ramondre Stevenson? Like, after, like, he didn't even actually see it.
Like, Kendrick Bourne's one of the smarter players.
Pass for 3 yards, and it's like, where's that going to go at the end of the day? Like, that doesn't seem like a positive value play to me. Like, what are we doing?
I don't know if PVP, positive value play, is a stat, but it should be. It's not? Okay. Well, then you know what? Don't anyone who's watching live right now or listening steal our IP because we just stumbled across something. So this now brings up a reason to share, of course, the soundbite that went viral for all the wrong reasons after the game yesterday. In his post-game presser, which I thought was mostly innocuous at the time, but later we found out people took umbrage with this particular statement, Mayo was asked about trying to get the guys prepared and wondering how much you can ask them to do on the field. And this was the response, which people then said was not befitting of a head coach in the NFL or the Patriots.
These guys cross the white lines. There's nothing I can do for them. There's nothing any coach can do for them once they cross the white line. It's my job to continue to prepare not only them, but our coaches to go out here and play better football. Thanks.
Okay, so, Borsch, I know you said the game was so bad, you tuned out afterwards immediately. Lucky you. You didn't have to do 3.5 hours on the radio like I did.
Yeah.
Thank me for my service later.
I'm not jealous of that.
Oh, God, no. No one should be. So,
fucking brutal.
So that thing went wild, and then he had to answer for it this morning. He said, that's how I've always felt. Like, I'll give you that's his style of parenting, we'll say. Like, I'll teach you everything inside the house. The minute you leave this house, you're on your own. The way you learn, the way you play, the way you behave, and the way you represent this family, or in this case, this football team. Do you like that? Do you like that approach? Is that a winning approach, or is that not obviously working right now?
Well, I mean, is it a winning approach? We kind of see the evidence that it's not, right? I mean, maybe it can be with the right players, but maybe they're not the right players and you need to coach them differently. I don't believe that like every person should be treated the exact same way, right? Like they're clearly treating Javon Baker like he's a second-class citizen when every offensive player fucks up week to week. So it's like, just let Javon Baker fuck up. Like, right. Maybe he makes a play or two, right? It's like, we see Hooper fuck up. We see Kendrick Bourne fuck up week in, week out. Like, useless fuck-ups constantly. So it's like, what is Javon Baker going to do that's so bad that you can't have them on the field, right? I don't know if that answers your question, but it's like, it's just one of those things, like try something else. Maybe the players are wrong. Obviously you can't get any more players, but the players you do have, maybe you should probably coach them a little differently, especially if they're different players. Like, why are you treating a vet in Kendrick Bourne the same way you would treat a rookie in Jaheim Bell or whatever, for instance, you know? Like, everyone should get the training that they need, the practice reps that they need, the dialogue that they need between the coach. It's not just, well, we tried, you know, we tried on Thursday and it didn't work out on Sunday, so here we are.
See, I'm with you. I think that's where you and I became like Twitter pals way back pre-draft. There was somebody prior to my finding you and following you and chatting on the side, that somebody who pointed out, like, this year's Puka Nacua may be Javon Baker. Let me show you the stats that will back up this theory. Or this hypothesis, which is certainly not a theory because the guy still doesn't even have a freaking NFL catch.
Yeah, you have to get a target for...
Yeah. Funny thing is you have to actually be on the field and have your quarterback throw the ball at you. And it was all about like his A-dot in college and his 22 yards per reception, big size, good speed, you know, transferred out of Alabama to Central Florida. But all the numbers basically said like this guy is going to be a diamond in the rough. And somebody just needs to take a chance on him, third, fourth round or so. So that's why I was over the moon when the Pats got him as the back end of moving away from McConkie, which I hated at the time, still do. They get Polk and Baker between the two. McConkie still has four times the stats of our two receivers combined. Now, I know he's in a much better situation, but holy smokes, like it's disastrous. And so if you've got a rookie quarterback, you know the season's not going anywhere, and you just want to run as many sims and situations as possible for this kid to learn and your guys to get reps so they can show if they're pros or schmoes, then what? Get Jaheim Bell out there. Throw Javon Baker the ball. Let him go up and fight for a 50-50 and show you he can do it. This coach to win the games thing, it's kind of ringing hollow. It feels like bullshit.
Yeah, it does feel like bullshit. And I think a lot of it comes back to AVP. I just think his offense is – someone said it the other day. I forget who it was. I'm sorry. Plays over players. So AVP thinks that, like, his plays are just so good that they're going to work if you execute them properly. If you run 12 yards and cut 45 degrees at fucking 2.5 seconds, this play will absolutely work 100% of the time against this defense, right? I don't necessarily believe that, especially when there's evidence to the contrary, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we tried the plays over players process. Let's try the other way around. Let's get some players in there that can make plays, that can be explosive, and see what happens. Because at this point, we're week 13. The offense is sputtering, even with Drake May in there. Mm-hmm. Like the EPA per play, most people, their eyes glaze over when they see EPA per play and shit like that. But it's just yards with context. It's just, okay, how many yards did you gain in a certain scenario on a certain side of the field, right? Positive is better. Negative is not good. It's a pretty simple concept. That is dog shit. Like flat out dog shit, whether it's Drake May or Jacoby Brissett. I'm not putting it on Drake May. It's an entire offense stat as far as I'm concerned. A lot of people put the EPA stuff on the quarterback themselves. Mm-hmm. But the quarterback can only throw to who's on the field and who's open, right? So if those variables don't exist, then the EPA is going to go down, right? I put that on the lack of playmakers on the field, which we can see every Sunday. How many snaps has Jalen Polk taken and he doesn't even get a target? What is he doing out there?
Did you see yesterday? It's supposed to be 3rd and 3, 5-yard penalty. Cause of course, you know, every third play, the Patriots had to satisfy their offensive line pre-snap penalty quotient. And so it goes to 3rd and 8 or 3rd and 9, whatever it was. And Polk takes a little bubble screen on the right and just starts dancing. And like, there was no find the first down marker and run to it. There was no pick a seam and give it the old college try. There was all of that again, the head thinking that's going on with this kid. There is no fluid playing right now. He is lost in his head. By the way, one of our viewers right now on YouTube Live, Joey Zagir, AVP should stand for average vertical plays. Pretty solid. Yeah, pretty solid.
BAVP. But like Jalen Polk, it's like he's one of those guys. I was excited to get him. He wasn't high on my list. I had Ladd McConkey miles ahead of him as far as like draft process and prospects, right? But the guy, the concept of Jalen Polk, like the good hands guy, that was something I wanted to pair with Drake May so bad, just because it's like throw it up, get it, catch it, come down with it. Even if you just catch cloud of dust, I'm fine with that as long as you're playing past the sticks, right? And as long as it's not 2nd and 13 every fucking play, you can get away with that. But I don't know what they're doing. Like, I think the Washington offense was a little more like find space and navigate to it, right? And he was good at that. Whereas, again, the AVP stuff is run this, hitch there, blah, blah, blah. It's like you have to do it this way or you don't play,
right?
So it's like, is he in his head too much to play? Are half of these guys in their heads too much to play? The only guy that looks effective every single week is Hunter Henry. And that's it. Like, that's it. So it's, I don't know what the answer is, but I feel like we're giving AVP, not me, but some people are giving AVP like a lot of leeway because he developed Drake May into what he is now, which is debatable shit because Drake May looks very much like Drake May to me.
I always own my bad takes and I've been giving him a ton of credit for that. And I know last week there was the Mark Daniels article and I even titled my weekly notes column on EEI, you know, could AVP be the MVP for Drake May? And I think he's done with it. I'll eat the L. Like Jameis Winston wants to eat a dub. I'll eat the L on this one. It's starting to look like this just is not a progressive forward thinking concept of offense. And The talent around him is bad too. I want to share this soundbite too. This was a question that our Chris Curtis on the morning show at EEI asked Gerard Mayo at the end of the interview today, after Mayo explained himself for the previous comments and whatnot. This was a pretty cutting question. And I think Mayo's answer, as far as the talent on the roster goes, Borish, is also telling.
Coaching differently if you had pieces to sub in for guys that were making mistakes. Is that just a fair blanket statement without calling anybody out in particular?
That's a fair assessment.
There you go.
Yeah.
So now there's is that Mayo throwing Wolf under the bus? I've lost a lot of faith in the offensive structure, Gerard Mayo, just a lot of things. Like I'm having a hard time thinking that this is all going to coalesce just magically by inserting a great draft, T. Higgins, and a couple other players. My regular podcast and broadcast partner, Andy Hart, on the afternoon show, says right now, if you have to do a blame pie, you have to cut at least a piece that's 51% of the pie and serve it to Elliot Wolf for what he's assembled on the team.
Maybe not. I mean, Elliot, there's a lot of evidence that he at least tried, right? I know trying, you don't get like awards for that, but Calvin Ridley, Brandon Ayuk, like he tried to get these players, right?
Right.
You can argue that he didn't get an offensive lineman. He did. They got injured, you know. Shit happens.
Right.
And the Chuks Okorafor thing was a nightmare. If they just left him at right tackle instead of fucking around and moving to the left, mm-hmm. maybe he's still there and, you know, Chop Robinson doesn't have a 60% pressure rate or whatever the hell it was yesterday. It was like right. obscene.
Unreal.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things that, yes, Elliot Wolf, it's on him. But they have players there that they haven't really tried. I think we just talked about a couple of them. Like Austin Hooper,
mm-hmm.
he's a fine player. But really that the one play he made yesterday was what, like the two safeties crashed into each other in the secondary and left him 20 yards away free, and May made a fucking, like a hell of a throw. Right.
That right there, that goes on our big takeaway on the postgame radio show, Borsch, was that
mm-hmm.
that goes on the recruitment tape. You take the play from the end of the Titans game. You take that 4th and 15. Like he found him running against his body, running to his right, throws against his body, is still able to deliver it 50 plus yards in the air to Austin Hooper sitting at
Ridiculous.
The three, who then squeaks into the end zone. Like,
yeah,
that's next level physical talent.
Of course. But to what I was saying earlier is that going to get you further? Like, obviously you want that in the tool bag, like fucking phenomenal.
Yes.
Like, let's see that every once in a while, but should we be better off? Like Austin Hooper makes that play once per game, or can we get Jaheim Bell the ball at the, you know, 3 yards over the line of scrimmage and see what he can do?
Right.
Cause he has more wiggle, more burst. Like, let's play some players with like explosivity and see what happens, because right now it's a joke and they scored 8 offensive points yesterday. Is that, I mean,
that's it. No, that's it. They scored 8 off it. They scored. Well, there was a nice little 2-point conversion after Gonzo ran the Jalen Wright touchdown back. I know, like they ran like a mini hook and ladder at this point.
Yeah. Which, okay, cool. Yay. Like people look at that kind of shit and they're like, oh, AVP is creative. Like they do that kind of shit. Right. And it's just like, no, he follows Dan Casey on fucking Twitter and he sees that play last week and he just runs it. Like, it happens. I mean, that's just like, that's what these coaches do. Good coaches steal, but like AVP, mm-hmm. how about you steal motion? What was the,
No one moves anywhere.
It's this most static offense on the fucking planet. Right.
Right.
Miami used motion at like 93% of the time. I have it written down somewhere. Like, it's obscene, the amount of motion they used yesterday. And let's see 4 touchdown passes off of motion. The highest rate, 93.7%.
That's actually that's our radio station.
Yeah, there you go. So 93.7 is the motion rate for Miami against your defense, and they fucking scorched you, right? They
right.
completed 27 of 37 pass attempts for 268 yards and 4 touchdowns using motion. And AVP acts like it doesn't exist, right? So mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, you want to steal a play off of Dan Casey's Twitter feed, knock yourself out, right? But you won't steal fucking motion from Sean McVay and from Mike McDaniel. Like, steal the shit that's working consistently, right, not the goofy shit that just works. You're like, oh, well, let's pull that out on a 2-point conversion when we're down by fucking 20.
Yeah.
Who cares at the end of the day?
Yeah, it
got him in a fucking bad mood, man.
I know,
in a fucking bad mood.
But that's where we all are now with these Patriots. Like, I'm always trying to stay positive. I always want to try to divine a takeaway that'll give you reason for hope and whatnot. Yeah. And that's why I titled this podcast, which I'm reasonably sure now that the algorithm will pick up, is a deserving and worthy so, because where we are in the season, of the explicit label. It's all good. I'm gonna share it and let everybody know. Like, if you want to hear real analytics done from a real fan who's real frustrated,
who's real fucking pissed off,
that's what Fitzy and Borsch are giving you right now. It's terrible, and that's why I called it Pats in disarray. Can a late season collapse be avoided? I think right now, if you were to go, like, this is gonna be my question going forward at the tailgate next Sunday before Pat's Colts, and boy, won't the razor be lit for that one. I'm going to ask fans, like, would you rather them continue along this path and see their way through with what you keep seeing run out there? Or would you rather they just bring in Bell and Baker and everyone else and say, you know what, kids, figure it out. We're gonna lose. We're only going to get a top five pick out of it. We're going to do our best. Like, let's bring in this, what is the name of the dude? Caleb Jones, the 6'9", 370-pound guy on the practice squad. Somebody logical might say, Boris, they might say, like, well, there's probably a reason they're not playing him because he's worse than Jamontre Jacobs, to which I would say, how can you be worse than Jamontre Jacobs at this point?
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, what do you have to lose? Like, what do you have to lose? Like, fucking, you're going to lose by like 40 instead of 30. Who cares at that point? Like, I like bad movies that are fun, right? Like old horror movies that are just completely cheesy and just ridiculous. And like, those are bad and fun. Like, this isn't bad and fun. This is bad and fucking boring. Like, this is like, I feel like it was my job yesterday watching that game. Like, I can't imagine watching that game, doing 3 hours of radio or TV or whatever, and like not being able to do something else. Like, I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm fucking cashed out. Like, I don't have to think about the Patriots. I can't imagine having to think about the Patriots for a living right now.
Oh, dude, it never ends. And I got to do radio tonight. And it's a constant toxicity that is starting to build up. Okay. So what is another one of the big things they've talked about, Borsch, is that they want, like, Mayo's big on trying to build the culture this year. So at least, if nothing else, like, the wins may not stack up, but at least they'll build a culture, and that they'll be able to forge an identity, which I believe that they have not been able to do yet. Here's the last thing I'll play. Gerard Mayo talked about this in his Zoom availability for Pat's Media on the Whole just after he talked to our radio station.
Culture been more difficult than even you expected?
I never thought that we would be able to reestablish a culture, you know, in year one. It's a process. It's hard to change a culture, and we're trying to put those pieces together. I think it would be a disservice, you know, to get to the end of the year and not know exactly what we have from a player or coaching perspective, and that has to be our focus.
All right, well, the tenets of I'll disagree. The tenets of a culture, or at least like you can start pouring the foundation for a culture as well. Like, I don't need to see the 5,500-square-foot palatial estate that is the new culture of the Patriots, but I believe you have to pour the foundation. You can't just say, hey, we got Drake May, so there's the beginning of the turnaround. Like, there need to be pieces around him as well. And if he says, like, oh no, we got to get some players in there, and, you know, and we're just, and the coaches, like, I don't know anything. Actually, what I can tell you is it looks like DeMarcus Covington is struggling to find a way to stop other teams from running whatever dream offense they want. Yeah, it looks like AVP is overmatched, and Gerard Mayo is constantly tap dancing around a million different issues, and he even seems overmatched.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped listening to Mayo like week three or four. Like, I used to listen to the press conferences and all that kind of shit. But then, like, it was just, he would say something, and then a day later, he would contradict himself, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I find zero value in listening to what he's actually saying, but that's why it's easier to look at, like, okay, what's actually happening? And like, extrapolate from there. And what's happening right now is, like, there's nothing really going on culture wise because I don't know how many of these guys, at least on offense, are going to be here long term. So it's like, how can you establish a culture on offense? On defense, maybe, because like we talked about, those guys are going to be here. But on offense, it's like, you went from having in a lot of people's mind, right? We just replaced the quarterback and we're good, right? Replace the quarterback, replace the head coach. Literally, people were saying this last year. Like, people were saying this.
Right.
And then you replace the quarterback with a better quarterback, 100% better quarterback. And then there's nothing around him. Nothing. Like, nothing. Is there anything that you would just, like, we need to have this back next year? Even Mike Onwenu, it's like, he's been so out of place all season because the line has been shambles that it's like he hasn't even had a good season. He's like, he's supposed to be the guy on our offensive line. He's
had a brutal, like, oh, we got the best free agent we got the best free agent offensive lineman, like, and he happened to be our own guy as well. Like, maybe he's having a hard time because the talent around him is so bad. I don't know, but Onwenu has taken major steps back this year. All right, so the culture is an issue. The play calling is an issue. The coaching is an issue. Everything's an issue. With the five remaining games, we can revisit this after the season, and we can really rip into it. But like with the five remaining games, what's the hope for it? I won't say turnaround, but to prevent a collapse that actually forces more work to be done to like overcome the regression before you start building towards 25, 26, and whatever.
I don't know. Like, let people play. Let them play. Like, let the kids play. Like you said, you were going to do that at the beginning of the season. It's a lost season, right? I mean, like, there was a couple weeks ago, people were holding out hope for the playoffs because the league is so bad, right? Like, there was a point where we were at two wins and we were like three or four games out of the playoff hunt. Those days are gone. Like, that's over. There's no playoffs. I'm not a guy that says tank. Like, I'm not a tank guy. Wasn't last year. Not going to be this year. Not going to be next year. Never will be.
100%
agree. Just play. The draft is a crapshoot. Like, you get what you get. I would love to, like, you know, get Abdul Carter or something. I think that's a guy that can play in a defense that they want to play, because right now they're playing a defense that it's sort of mimicking like what Belichick wanted to do, not really what Covington wants to do. Covington seems to be like he wants to do the, you know, the Mike McDonald stuff, the stuff they're doing in Miami. They're moving the linebackers up. They're moving the defensive ends back into coverage, things like that. You need athletes for that. Abdul Carter's like a guy that can do that. So it would be nice to get that guy, but it's like, should you tank a couple of games in order to secure that guy? Probably not. Like, that's just bad process. I just think they're kind of at a point where try and win as best as you can. Like, just play who needs to play. Don't worry about AVP's offense. It's not the future of the league. I think we can see that because you have a legitimate talent at quarterback and it's not working. And it's on the players and it's on the play calling. It has to be, right? We all agree that May has been up above expectations, right?
Oh, like, a thousand percent. Like, you, yeah, I first saw it on your timeline a few weeks ago, the whole, I think you said like this is a Drake May tweet or something. Or you said like imagine what this kid would do with just an average NFL offensive line.
Of course,
his EPA out of structure is the best in the NFL. It's up there with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. You can see what he can do. His physical gifts. He remains calm under duress. He moves so well. But like there is no one is even close to commensurate in terms of football talent and physical skill like this kid is right now.
No,
I'd say, yes, I'm with you. Just let the kids play so you can get your clearest vision for who may have something you can work with or build around.
Who's coming back in 2025? That's all that really matters is who's going to be here to establish the culture next year, because there's going to be, would you be surprised at a 50% turnover on offense next year?
I'd actually say higher.
It might be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the whole offensive line could be different outside of Onwenu and, you know, the rookies that aren't technically playing right now. I'm just talking about, like, the Week 12 offensive roster.
Right.
How many of those guys are back? Like, is Hooper back? I don't know his contract, but, like, do we need Hooper back? Like, is that somebody we should re-sign? Or should we play Bell the rest of the season and see if he can do some stuff maybe out of the backfield, out of H-back, things like that? I don't know. Modernize the offense a little bit so there's a little more motion, a little more condensed sets. Let's fucking see a real offense. Like, see if AVP can run it. Let's see if Drake May can run it. Like, I understand, like, not doing the motion stuff, the heavy motion stuff early on in the season. But when you come out and you say, we're not rookies anymore, okay. If we're not rookies anymore, let's let's open it up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just see what we can do, because Drake May has gotten better outside of last week, outside of Sunday against
he
Miami.
He was due for one bed shitting, though.
Of course. I'm not holding that against him. And nope. Honestly, I'm putting that more against Scheme than on him, because too much stuff downfield. It's ridiculous. Like, let the kid play a little underneath and then attack over. If you can't run the ball and your whole scheme is run to go deep, then you can't go deep and you can't run. Just make the short game, short passing game, an extension of your run game. Right.
Right.
It makes sense to me. I don't know if it makes sense in the real world, but I've seen it executed. Short game, short passing game is an extension of the run game that opens up the deep passing. Everyone has to move up, boom, then you can hit deep, right? Let's do some of that. Like, this static offense that we see week in and week out, it's not cutting it. Let's evolve it a little bit and see what Drake May can do. Push his boundaries a little bit, because it, like, man.
Yeah, I refer to AVP's offense as a seventh grade dance. It is just like, it is so static. It's just like, stagnant, and they leave a little room for the Lord or somebody to go offsides. Wayne Felch, great comment from watching live on Facebook. Motion, they have penalties when they aren't in motion. So what do we have to lose?
Really.
And Andrew Dickinson, good comment as well. He is actually the third most on target quarterback in the NFL thus far. Imagine what he'll do if the kids are out there trying to, like, Javon Baker at this point probably understands too, like, as it's all slowly coming together. There's a piece on Mass Live about how he's, or it's in the Globe today about how he says it's all starting to make more sense to him. All right, let him prove he deserves to be on the team next year, or that he's worth an NFL receiver. Stephen Tower, great comment here. Hey, how about that tight end from Miami? He looked pretty good.
That was the most predictable shit ever, by the way.
People should be paying for their holidays. The anytime touchdown by Jonnu Smith yesterday was the smartest bet on the board. And I'll leave you with this. Yep, that's right, Jimmy Arbor. We never see audibles. You're right, because there probably aren't a ton of them in there because they want to just teach him the basics.
That's probably a May thing too, rookie QB thing. Yep. But again, like, let's see if he can do it. Let's see what he can do. Like, let's give the kids a chance, and that's how you establish going forward who deserves to be on this team. Because if Javon Baker ends up, like, having a better five games to close out the season than Jalen Polk, mm-hmm. I don't know. That changes the calculus next year, doesn't it?
100% it does. 100%.
So it's like, if it's between, if we take a, I don't know, Tet McMillan, I can already feel myself being the voice of reason on the Tet McMillan pick, but that's a podcast for another day.
Yeah.
If we take a wide receiver, unnamed wide receiver in the first, who are we replacing him with, right? Is it going to be Polk, who can't fucking line up, can't catch the ball, can't get open?
Can't crack the lineup, yeah.
Like, or can we get Javon Baker some snaps and see if he can do those things? And if it's worth it, reinvesting another year into the kid. I think it will be, but it's not my team. I can't make the decision for him.
No, neither mine as well. But I think a lot of these issues, there are almost 2 minutes to recount in one podcast, in one blog article, in one radio show. Luckily, I get to do more of that later on tonight as well on EEI. Lucky me as well. I'm with you. I think my walk away, my big takeaway is just let the kids play and figure it out. Yeah. However, last item, and I appreciate all the extra time today, bro. This has been a ton of fun.
So
there were reports. Andrew Callahan had it in the Herald. Then Mark Daniels tweeted about it this morning, that there was laughing and that there was, like, a very light atmosphere in the locker room. Tweeted out, a friend of mine hipped me to that clip. It 100% didn't happen, but in the movie Moneyball, where Brad Pitt as Billy Bean walks into the locker room before he starts revamping the team with his war-centric approach, and they're all partying after a loss, and he's like, is losing fun to you? You know, and there's a whole confrontation between the players and Brad Pitt's iteration of Billy Bean. And I'm kind of wondering, like, is there just a bad mindset? Are they taking advantage of the lax approach that it seems that Jerod Mayo is bringing to the team? Because if so, how do you corral them into actually giving it their all in auditioning for a job next year if they're all just going to dick around and think it's funny and, you know, catch an Uber home?
Yeah, and it's interesting that, like, I heard May speak after, and he was like, remember this feeling about losing. Remember this feeling. And if they're all laughing and joking in the back, then that's not a bad feeling to remember. Those are good times. So I don't know how remember this feeling works. And, like, I hope May's leadership translates. It's a little collegey. Like, it's a little, like these are pros. So I really don't, like, you want to fuck around after a game in Miami, like, that's fine. I don't care. You're all professionals. Like, I have a bad day at work. I don't I don't beat myself up over it. You know, right. That's just, and that's normal, I think, for depending on who you are. Some people will take it more personally. Some people will take it harder than others. Individuals are individuals. If five people are laughing in a locker room of 53 people, what does that tell you? Nothing, you know? Yeah. So I don't really care. At the end of the day, I don't really care. I just think it's a funny dichotomy with May's comments about remember this feeling. There's a couple guys that are just like living their best life in there, you know?
Right. Yeah, they're all in there, you know, going IG live, just like, look where we, you know, we out here in Miami, what's up?
Yeah.
And then but that's good. At least that tells me that innate competitive drive in him to want to be better is going to be the guiding force of this team.
Yeah.
Now we just need, I don't know, coaches, coordinators, and 52 other guys to get in lockstep behind him and cut the shit out.
Yeah,
all right, folks. It's been an absolute pleasure doing the Patriots debut podcast of Boorish Sports. You can give my guy Bo a follow at Boorish_sports. You'd know him by the Ed O'Neill avatar as well. His tweets are analytical. Sometimes they're numerical. They're next generational. And sometimes they're humorous, engaging, and altogether honest. And I appreciate the hell out of him for jumping in with us today for the kind of podcast that I think we needed. We needed it raw. We needed it NSFW. We needed it real today. And the big takeaway, just play the kids. Just let them figure it out. Just let them go, and we'll see what happens. What are you going to do? Lose some more football games? No one cares. That's where we are. Nope. Nobody cares. All right. So that'll do for the latest Six Rings and football things. Everybody, thanks for listening. I'll be on the radio tonight if you happen to take this in on Monday. Give Bo a follow. Have a great Thanksgiving. If we don't connect again, we'll have him back on either later in the season or after the season's over as we take a look towards a 2025 that should be very interesting indeed. Tell your friends about the pod. Subscribe on Apple Pod, Spotify. Use the Odyssey app or whatever platform you need to find your awesome football talk. Thanks again, Bo. Good day. God bless everyone. And let's freaking go, Pats.